Honestly. So today, I'm in... Well, we've got a question, haven't we? I'm with Louis Counter again, but today is going to be a bit of an experimental interview. He's going to interview me.
In my best British broadcasting accent.
Oh, please don't.
So, Janet, mm-hmm. where are we?
We are in possibly the only field in Croydon. Is that the case?
I think you could say we're in one of the few. Certainly ones that you did. There's lots of parks in Croydon, and this one's got goalposts in half of it.
Yeah.
But yes, it definitely would qualify as a field where a lot of them wouldn't.
I'm just wondering if I pause, we can hear the birds. So, yeah, I might cut that in. I might not. We'll see.
Mental note to self to go around and record bird song at high gain later on and try and cut out the traffic noise in the background.
So we are in Croydon and we're on, I always get this wrong, it's the Roundshaw playing fields now, isn't it?
Yes.
But it was...
And it's still referred to as...
The airport.
Yeah, Croydon Airport, Croydon Airfield.
Croydon Airport or Croydon Airfield. So that's where we are, and there are pictures on the website of the beautiful buttercups and the field. And one of the things about Croydon was it had grass runways for a long time because the earliest flights from here used to have to actually turn to take off into the wind, so they had an asphalty, concretey pavement immediately outside the terminal. Then you came up with apron. When you come off the apron, you would go onto the grass to take off.
I did not know that.
That's why.
Have we covered why we're here?
I'm not sure that we have. We're here because this was a really special place for my dad, and this is where my dad wanted to be remembered. So we've come to have a cup of tea here and to talk about my dad. He will be the only dead person, I promise, that we're having a cup of tea with.
Speaking of which, did he drink tea?
He did drink tea. He drank a lot of tea. And I kind of have vague memories of when I was very little of there being quite some discussion about types of tea. I think at one point they splashed out on gunpowder tea, which actually I had gunpowder tea yesterday at Caroline's. But he wasn't really a tea connoisseur.
He just liked a cuppa. So what was his favourite tea, would you say?
Just any sort of tea. And I was really distressed to find that he would drink instant tea with instant milk.
Ooh.
But that was okay for him, because I think it was just having the tea which was important for him.
Now, I hesitate to ask this question, but it's on my list of questions.
Yeah, so I've written Louis the interview questions.
Where did you first meet your father, if that's not a silly question?
I was thinking about this this morning, because my dad's family situation had been quite odd when he was growing up. His mum wasn't very well, and his dad was away at war for quite a long time. And so my dad was really just kind of almost just didn't understand what being a dad was about when children were little. So I think for me, one of the most important things was when I was at a conference in North London, and I'd been asked to speak at short notice, and it was a Saturday-Sunday conference, which was really unusual. It was a brilliant conference, and I'd spoken in my flight. They'd give me a 5-minute slot, and that'd been fine. But my dad and his friend Margaret came to arrive to put me back on the train to Edinburgh. And he arrived, and I was packing things up, and this American lady was going, "Wow, she's your daughter. She did this amazing thing." And I think that this morning, because she just spoke and she hadn't got any notice. And to be honest, I was like at the end of my PhD, and if I couldn't talk for 5 minutes about my PhD results at that point, I was going to be really stuffed. But, but she spoke to him, and he and Margaret had brought me sandwiches for the train. We went and had a cup of tea, and they came with me to King's Cross, and we had a chat, and they put me on the train at King's Cross with these sandwiches. And for me, that's still something I remember as kind of pivotal moment, when actually that he seemed a bit more grown up. That sounds awful. I would have been 24 probably at that point. He seemed a bit more grown up and a bit more able to think, and I guess that was kind of a change from, he had no idea how to deal with me, and suddenly I was an adult, yeah. And that was different, and that, but that was a bit easier.
Yeah. So what do you think your dad would have said in response to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
It's quite tricky, because when I was little, there was a real sense that he was very anti-church. And we didn't go to church when he still... We didn't go to church as a family. I was going to say I didn't go to church when he lived with us. That's not quite true, because I think for about a year, maybe 18 months, I went to Sunday school by myself. And wow. I did that until... So I go to church, which was geographically close to our house. I go to Sunday school, and then I'd wait, and somebody had to come and get me from Sunday school. And I did that until the day they forgot to come and get me from Sunday school, and I had to sit by the poster paint in the school hall where we had the Sunday school. And I think what happened, I might have remembered this wrong, because I was only like 8 or 9. I think what happened is my elder brother arrived home, and my parents had been rowing, and he said to them, "Where's Janet?" And they're like, "Oh, she's stuck at Sunday school," and somebody, it might even have been my older brother, came to get me at that point. So I stopped going to church then for a while, until after my parents had separated. And then we did go, I went with my brother and my mum a bit. And so there was kind of a perception of great antagonism. And then when I had my eldest child, my dad managed to succeed in having a heart attack within like a fortnight or 3 weeks of that. And I hadn't told him that I'd been selected for ordination at that point. So I went onto the ward and I felt I really had to tell him, I'm going to be ordained, ready for him to say, "You are throwing your life away." And he was much more composed about it than I thought he was going to be. He was much more sensitive than I actually thought he was capable of, really. And then on other occasions, he sort of said, "I wish I could have your faith." So I don't know whether he's moved from the kind of position I would have perceived in the 1970s of him declaring that religion was the opiate of the masses, to actually being quite jealous of those who had something.
Yeah. Now, we're on Croydon Airfield.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think your dad was so interested in aircraft?
I'm now eating a gluten-free cookie as well. So that's the munchy noises. I was thinking about this today, and I think there were lots of reasons he was really interested in aircraft. Probably from being a little boy in the war.
Mm.
That was quite exciting, and having your spotter book and all those sorts of things. But also, for him, being a member of the ATC had been a real lift for him out of poverty, and in some ways kind of to do with... gave him a possibility for social mobility and those things which we kind of forget about. But he loved aircraft. He actually had a glider's pilot license, which I didn't know for a long time. And so he flew gliders at one point. And he loved the sort of... He wasn't really an engineer, but he loved the aesthetic of flying, as well as the kind of association with... changing world, I think. And I guess that probably ties in a bit with the next question.
not supposed to know the questions, though. Surely I'm making these up as I go along.
Everyone gets their questions in advance, including me.
So, why do you think your dad was so interested in modernism?
So this ties in with the social mobility sort of aspect. So my dad's dad had been a miner. They lived in North Shields. He'd been a miner, and then he retrained in the Depression. They moved to Reading, where my dad was actually born in Reading, and the next door neighbour who lived in Reading next to them said to my grandfather, my dad's dad, all your grandchildren will go to university. And this was mid-30s, said, my granddad thought that was impossible. He thought that was so unlikely and just impossible that he kind of laughed at him. And yet that person was a real prophet for that generation in that there was progress and all the grandchildren did go to university.
Yeah.
And there was part of that whole modernism movement of moving forward, of looking for new possibilities, of not being constrained by the problems of poverty and poor education and all those things which kind of socially held people back. And there was, during the 20th century, there was this huge social mobility, and that I think my dad saw the modernism as part of that, and but he also really liked the aesthetics of the kind of modernist things of going forward and looking at breaking away from the traditions of the past in that way. And I did once find a book for him on Amazon. I think on Amazon I searched for Modernist Airport. I thought that would be a good... And it turned up a book on the modernist architectures of airport around the world. And I thought, great, that's Christmas sorted out. So I think it's that kind of look of hope for the future and stuff in which he grew up alongside the war and all those sorts of things. It was that kind of hope and striving. Yeah.
So why won't your mum... Why won't we be having cups of tea with your mum in the series?
So, I was thinking about this, and there are probably more reasons than this, but my mum's ashes are interred in Box, so she's excluded from this 100 Cups of Tea project by being a resident of Box. So she may yet appear in some future podcast, but she can't appear in this one because I'm not allowed to see or think about any residents of Box whilst I'm on sabbatical.
That's good. Good answer. I like that. What do you think would have been your dad's favourite thing beginning with T?
I should have spent more time on Google doing this, because I bet there's some sort of civil aircraft that begins with T, but I can't think of it. The only thing I could think of was Trilander. I don't know if he was a big fan of Trilanders. I mean, Trilanders are very interesting civil aircraft because they're very small and they do lots of things. And the hint and tip about Trilanders is that if you're ever in a Trilander and you're about to take a small and potentially quite rough flight, check your airsick bag in case somebody's cut the bottom out of it as a joke. that apparently they used to do that in the Falkland Islands ones. You had to check them in the Falkland Island Trilanders. But I'm trying to think of this. I don't think there's a series of other big aircraft, but he would have found some sort of civilian aircraft to do, because civilian aircraft were his thing, really. He was a member of the like a flight lieutenant in the ATC for a long, long time. But certainly when he left that and when he retired, civilian aircraft became his passion, and particularly this kind of 1920s, 1930s period. And he was chair of Croydon Airport Society for 10 years, so that was a long time. And he was very keen on talking to people in the visitor centre. And I never quite worked out how that might have gone, because he didn't really understand children, but that was it. So it would have been some sort of aircraft like that.
Now, do I say thank you to you for...
Well, maybe maybe you should try and think of an extra question, because we need... We could do with another 3 minutes. So I could... we could talk about the wedding, actually. So I could ask you where you first met my dad. I'll interview you for a moment then about that then. So, Louis, do you think you ever met my dad?
I don't... I saw your dad, I think, at your wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Because you pointed him out to me. I don't think I ever met him, which is odd, given that for... I mean, I've lived in Croydon 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I live within... easily within a mile of this place. So, yeah, and I hadn't got any concept that your family were local to here at that time, so...
No, you did help quite a bit, actually, when we were clearing out his flats.
Yes.
Because his flats were full of all sorts of things, which went to all sorts of places, and some of it was auctioned off as well. Mainly, I have to say, well, a lot of junk... and model aircraft.
There were lots of model aircraft.
In fact, we gave... When we had Dad's funeral... This is quite a nice story, actually. It's my brother Ian's idea. Some of the nice model aircraft that Dad had finished, we put out on the side, and we asked everyone who came to the funeral if they'd like to take a model aircraft home to remember Dad. So that was quite nice.
That's brilliant.
So that didn't tackle the most of the model aircraft, but that was so. And I think I came to yours for dinner after the funeral, didn't I? And then,
yeah.
But at the wedding, and this was kind of indicative. So my mum had bumped into my dad in the hotel corridor before Ian and I were married in the morning, and she threatened to go home. And I said, "Well, you can go home if you want to." And she said, "I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk to him. I don't have to." And I'm like, "Well, that's okay. I'm getting married. You can go home or what?" Really, at that point. And then immediately after the ceremony in the grounds of the church, I remember coming over to you or summoning you over. Can you remember if it was a summoned by the bride moment or whether I actually came over?
I cannot remember.
And went, "Can you please keep my parents apart? If you see my dad going towards my mum, can you stop him?" And you assured me that you would prevent that from happening, that you would keep an eye out.
Yeah.
And that worked, and that worked really well. I find that really reassuring. That was 24 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm still in trauma from the little tartan bows on.
Oh, yeah.
It's a string.
Yeah, yes. Yes, tartan. I don't think tartan would have been a favourite. Okay, so Louis, I think you probably need to say thank you to me, or do I say thank you? I think I need to say thank you to you for coming with me, having a cup of tea here.
It's all right.
This is the first time I've been back to Croydon Airport for a while. I mean, there isn't an airport here now. It is fields and playing fields. But it is... They've built on half of it, but I'm really pleased that their space is still here.
It's a lovely big area. It's really nice.
And it's something... It kind of feels that you could expect an aircraft to take off any moment.
Yeah.
So... The other thing, which is quite interesting... which I wasn't sure how it would go, is now I actually have with me the car which was my dad's, because we had a car disaster and my brother had it for a while and then he's given it to us, and it's a Hyundai Amica, which is tiny, and in our house his name is Amy, and we had a long discussion about naming the car. We really only named the car because we have two small red cars, so all the obvious distinctions were gone. Named Amy partly because it's a Hyundai Amica, but mainly named Amy after Amy Johnson.
Oh, nice.
So, this little Hyundai Amica is now going on travels, which it didn't with my dad. I'm hoping it's going to get me to Morpeth next week, or later on this week.
We bolt wings on it, we could see if we can bring it into land on Croydon Airport.
That would be really cool. So thank you very much, Louis, for asking me the questions.
You're welcome. It's been really nice.